Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas City, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Beach Pass,
Toronto FC, Salt Lake,
this is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire,
this is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
It's that time of the week, your favorite time of the week. It's when the new episode of Pitch Pass drops. Thank you so much for downloading it, and thank you very much for taking a listen. I hope you will enjoy it. If you're a fan of Orlando City SC, I think that you will enjoy it because we'll be talking with the man who covers Orlando City for the Orlando Sentinel a little bit later on. That will be Paul Tenorio, and he will give us all the rundown on the U.S. Open Cup situation. Why don't you just listen, and we will give you all the details on what Paul and I will be talking about when we talk about it. First up, though, a guy who you can't blame him if he's got one eye on what he's doing with his job and one eye on what his lady is doing with her job. His wife, Sydney LaRue, is playing for the women's national team during the Women's World Cup while he does his thing for Sporting Kansas City. Dom Dwyer's first up on Pitch Pass. Dom, how are you? Good to speak with you again.
Good to chat to you. I remember vaguely.
It was preseason. There's a lot going on in preseason. You know how it is.
Yeah, I got you.
Were you having trouble with painters today?
Painters, yeah. Not having trouble, but just trying to get my house decorated a little bit. And so it wasn't a trouble. I think that's a good problem to have.
Definitely. Well, Dom, you know, we all know your wife is out of town. So are you authorized to make these changes to the house while she's gone?
Yeah, I mean, I don't normally ask permission for things, she's living with me too, but I think I'm allowed to paint. I think I can get away with that.
Okay, all right. So when she comes back, it's not going to be a situation where we have to have a discussion. It's just, oh, okay, you painted, cool.
Hopefully, it's a nice surprise. So hopefully, she's not listening and you don't hear that one.
So I just found out you actually went up to Canada for one of the matches. Is that correct?
I did for the first one in Winnipeg.
And how was? Because you know a lot of people Americans can't make it up for the Women's World Cup, which is going on. And people who don't know, Dom is married to Sydney LaRue, who was playing a major role for the U.S. national team. How was it up there? What was the experience like?
It was actually incredible. It was a really fun experience, and you know, I got to meet a lot of cool people, and you know, the families of girls on the team, and you know, I started to get to know some of the girls on the team too. So it you know, definitely means a lot more to me as well, obviously, because my wife's on the team.
Yeah.
But you know, obviously getting to know some of the other girls too, and you know, hearing their stories and seeing how much it means to them. You know, it's just a nice atmosphere to be around, and obviously, I'm used to that being a footballer as well. So. You know, it was a really cool experience, and you know, hopefully, I get to go to another game. I'm going to try and fit it in the schedule somewhere.
Well, you know, and you're in a unique situation because you know, I'm sure your family members, friends have been in this spot where they've had to watch you do your thing. How nerve-wracking is it for the family member, the husband in this case, to watch his wife out there perform in these high-pressure situations?
It's tough. You know, I've always been one to. I kind of like high pressure situations. I mean, that feeling I crave for. But when it's not really in your control and you're sitting there being a spectator, it's very difficult. And I think I understand now why my parents have such a tough time watching me. So I understand those stresses now. But it's actually, you know, I'm always very proud of her watching her play. I've seen her grow as a player and see how hard she works and off the field as well. And I think that's. It's nice when you see those rewards come out.
I don't want to focus too much on Sydney. I know you've got a lot going on yourself, but you know, I feel like from a soccer fan point of view, your relationship, the two of your relationship, kind of came out of nowhere. How long have you guys been kind of seeing each other or talking before you decided to make the big jump to marriage?
Cool. That's a really interesting question. That one. No, it made me laugh. You don't want to talk about Sydney, but you and Sydney.
Here's another Sydney question.
Yeah. No. We've been friends for a while. You know, a few years, and there was always something there. It was kind of right away. We felt a little something, and it was, you know, at the time we were just friends, and that's all we could be at that time. And you know, it's kind of cool when things start that way. And then it was like we just kind of met at the right time at the in our lives, I guess, at the exact same time. And it just sort of began to blossom. And you know, the more we saw each other, the more we got along and became closer and closer. And I guess the inevitable happened.
So, okay, let's talk about you. There's a lot going on with Sporting Kansas City, not least of which we are in a U.S. Open Cup week here. You guys played your match versus St. Louis FC. What was that atmosphere like against a team from a city that has aspirations to be where Kansas City is as far as MLS and probably your biggest rival if that ever happens?
Yeah, it was, you know, they're a very good side, and we were known not to underestimate teams just because they're in the lower league. You know, those things can happen, and we had a tough time. They did a good job against us, but, you know, we managed to get the result, and we were very pleased. And Open Cup is a competition that we want to do well in, and it's very important to us, and it also gets in the Champions League for next year, and that's something we want to do and achieve. So we're very focused on it as a team to win a couple titles this year.
Do you have any extra perspective or insight that you can give to your teammates as a guy who has come from a country where the Open Cup or the FA Cup in England is such a big deal? Is there anything that you can say or have to say to the rest of the guys in Sporting about what these competitions mean and what they're like?
I guess just play. I guess play the game, not the occasion. I'm pretty sure that was Alex Ferguson's quote. I love that one. You know, it's a cup game, and it's knockout. It's whoever wins on that day. You know, you go through to the next round. So you have to win 5-6 games in a row to do something very special. And you know, when there's a light at the end of that tunnel, sometimes it's something where you really want to attack it and go for it. So it's you know, I guess yeah, play the game, not the occasion.
And I know your league form is pretty good lately, especially after the kind of shaky start. I don't want to say bad start, but shaky start. How important was it to get those early season games under your belt, regardless of the results, to kind of blend in these new faces, bringing Roger back in and blending him back into the side?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a club, we've established ourselves as one of the best teams in the league. And, you know, with that comes big expectations now as well.
Exactly. So,
you know, we had a lot of new players, and sometimes it's difficult to make things click right away. So we had guys coming in, and you know, we've got guys coming off injuries, and we've been a bit unlucky, and we lost a few guys. So we're just kind of, you know, bringing all the pieces together. But you know, this squad we have right now is unbelievable. And you know, there's a healthy competition for positions and places, and we have guys who can step in at any point, and we have guys who have been there for a long time, and experienced guys, younger guys. There's so much talent on this team. It's just an exciting place to be, and you know, I'm hoping for very big things this year and years to come.
You brought up the fact of the expectations, not just in Kansas City, but throughout the league. Sporting, at least for me, and I'm not a Sporting fan, but I hold Sporting to a standard that when they don't reach it, I go, oh, what's going on with the team? You brought it up, and it's a great point. How important was it, though, to have guys who have been through these wars, who know the Sporting system, and also to see the coach and go, okay, you know, Peter's got it under control, and we're going to be okay because we trust where our coach is bringing us?
Yeah, I mean, of course, we had to go back to the drawing board. You know, we lost a lot of people, and we changed a lot of things, and, you know, last season didn't quite go as we planned, and we just made playoffs, and then we were out pretty quickly. So it was a difficult time and frustrating for us all, but you know, we're a very close group, and you know, the atmosphere around the workplace is very special, and you know, guys from coming from different places have told me that as well, and you know, said how different it is at Sporting and how amazing it is. And I think a tough challenge for us is that when teams come to play at our stadium, they know it's going to be full every time, so they're going to be excited, and they're going to have to hear this atmosphere, which is, you know, not like many others around the league, and you know, to me is the best atmosphere, and you know, they come to that, and that's where you want to play, and you're going to play your best. So we know every game that we're going to get our opponent's best game, and you know, they're going to be focused and ready to try and beat us. So we're that team that's, you know, we're going to be fighting for it every time, and you know, we want our trophy. So
I wanted to ask you about Nemeth, because every time I've seen him, he catches the eye when he's on the pitch. Same thing with you. You guys haven't had a chance to play a ton of minutes together, but what's it like training with him every day? You talk about competition for places. What's it like training for him every day, and how excited are you for the future of your partnership together?
I love playing with Christian. You know, from day one, as players, sometimes you'll have a few training sessions with someone, and you start to feel this connection, and it was something that I felt right away with him. And it makes you work harder off the ball for that player. It makes you want to move for him. He's a very intelligent player, and he's a little bit older than me and a bit more experienced than me, so I have a lot to learn from him, and it's nice. He helps me out in training, and I try and help him out where I can. But he's an unbelievable player, and I just really enjoy playing with him, and I'm excited to for me and him to keep banging in some goals, and a Sturridge and Suarez combination, like at Liverpool, just banging 20 goals each. That would be nice.
Well, this to show you how old I am, Dom. As soon as you were looking for that partnership you wanted to throw out, I was going to say SAS, but that's like 90s references, Dom.
Yeah.
See, you don't even know what I'm talking about. Sutton and Shearer.
No, it's Sturridge and Suarez, SAS.
That's the new SAS. How, and as a fan, how much do we take for granted the importance of not a friendship, but some sort of mutual respect or relationship between a set of strikers? And how important is that, if it is important?
It's massively important, but I think it's important that, every player on the team, you have to realize that, you could score as many goals as you want, but if you don't play as a team, then you don't win, and you need your whole team to win. I had a ton of goals last year, and to me that was a complete failure of a season, because we didn't win any trophies, and we were knocked out in the first round. So I think that's the kind of players that we have across the whole board at Kansas City. So we're all guys who are hungry, and we want to win, and we don't really care how we win or who does it. We do it together as a group, and forwards, you're hungry, you want to score goals, but the connection you have with someone else is if someone else is in a better position and you can give them the ball, then you give them the ball, and they tap it in the back of the net, and you celebrate as a team, and we win together and lose together, and I don't think it's ever been more true than it is with this.
Speaking as again as a fan, but as an American fan, we always carry this little chip on our shoulder, comparing ourselves to European environments, atmospheres, other clubs, what have you. And I always, when I look at you, I go, okay, he's British. Has he ever had some of his friends from back home here to Sporting or another one of these atmospheres? And what are their impressions like when they see something like the Sporting Park atmosphere?
I've had a couple of friends come out here. I actually have about three or four of my closest friends coming next weekend. It's going to be their first time coming out, so they're pretty excited about that. So they've you experience atmospheres in Europe, and I've been to a lot of games in England, and the atmosphere at Sporting Park is different to what would be I guess considered as the American or MLS.
Yes.
Fan bases, it's considered differently in England, and fans are a little bit more passionate and crazy, I guess, about their team in Europe. But I think Kansas City, they have that same craziness and passion, which I love, and it drives you as a player, and it makes you hungrier, and you just want to play, you want to run. It gives you that little bit of extra energy.
Now you don't, but so I guess. When they come to town, you won't have to prep them by saying, "Oh, just remember it's a little different." You're not gonna downplay it. It's gonna be, come on over, check it out. I know you're gonna be impressed.
Oh yeah, of course. I don't even have to hype it up. They already know what they're gonna get into. They're excited and
good.
They're ready to see their friend play who they used to kick about on a field with. So they can't believe that anyone comes to watch me play.
But, again, as an American fan, that kind of makes me smile, because if you just got regular guys in England who know about the atmosphere, who know about the league and are excited to come over and watch it, that makes me smile a little bit.
Good.
Good. Glad I can make you smile. All right. So listen, before I let you go, and I know you've probably been asked this a million times before, and this is not a Sydney question. This is a Dom question.
Yeah, you're lying.
This is a Dom question. What is your child going to turn out for the U.S.?
I think that might be a Sydney question.
This is a dumb question. just like you don't have to ask about painting a room, you also don't have to ask about what team your child is going to play for.
Oh, I'm still trying to find a team to play for, and then well, I guess once I do that, then we'll see if I get a call up and start doing really well, then I think they'll have to be American.
But, okay, so
I'm just kidding. Well, I don't know. I haven't even looked for. I don't even know what I want for dinner yet, to be honest.
All right. So, well, let me ask you this: You've married an American woman.
Kind of.
But does this fast track your American citizenship?
I think it is. It's a possibility.
If it was something you were interested in, it probably does, if you were interested in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Listen, Dom, I'm just saying that you have another option maybe on the table moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see 14 in red, white, and blue representing. That's all. Just planting that seed, Dom.
Me too. It would be an absolute honor, you know. I've made this country my home now, so, you know, it's very nice to be even, you know, in the conversations about that. But, you know, I think I've got a lot to improve on as a player and to learn and grow. And, you know, obviously if that ever comes a possibility, then, you know, I'll grasp it with two hands and absolutely attack it.
Dom, two answers, and both of them have made me smile, the last two answers.
Good, I like that. So, I like to make smiles.
And I thank you, Dom. Appreciate the time, and best of luck the rest of the season, my friend.
Thanks very much. Have a good one, guys.
That is a good man, Dom Dwyer, and he made me smile. Twice, so he's even a better man than even you think. Good talking with him. He did some time in Orlando. I don't know if you knew that or not. We'll ask about that situation and get all up to date with everything Orlando City SC with the man who covers the team for the Orlando Sentinel. His name's Paul Tenorio. He joins us right now. Paul, welcome for the first time to Pitch Pass.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Been a fan for a long time.
And, you know, I think we should start there because if people aren't following you on Twitter, they may not know. You've got the whole Orlando thing locked down as part of your assignment with the Orlando Sentinel. And you kind of learned at the foot of what everybody kind of looks at as the American soccer master in Stephen Goff.
It's true. I was very, very fortunate to begin my career at the Washington Post and to start working with somebody like Steve Goff, who, you know, so graciously from my very first days at the Post allowed me to write about soccer, to be around soccer, to help him on the DC United beat, the U.S. national team beat, really the freedom to write any types of stories I thought were worth writing. And I don't think every newspaper reporter in the world would have maybe treated me that way, but Steve did. It just goes to show how good of a guy he is, and I was able to learn a lot working with Steve and under Steve at the Post.
Now, I know the reporters usually don't like to talk about themselves too much, but I am kind of curious. Was it a situation where you wanted to write about soccer? Did you have a desire to write about soccer? And what was it like then moving to Orlando, where they were in the process of putting together a USL team that would eventually become Orlando City, the MLS team?
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely, my long-term goal has been to cover soccer full-time. I grew up in the D.C. area, so working for the Washington Post was a dream come true in a lot of different ways. I mean, obviously, the standing of that newspaper speaks for itself, but then it was also the newspaper I read growing up and one of the big reasons why I became a journalist in the first place. So it was difficult to leave, but I left at a time just because I needed a chance to grow and get onto my own beat, and actually went down to Orlando at the recommendation of friends initially to cover UCF football, which ended up working out great for me, by the way. I mean, they went to the Fiesta Bowl and Blake Bortles was drafted at number 3 overall.
Yeah.
And all this amazing stuff. And then all of a sudden, boom, there's an MLS team in the market, and it couldn't have worked out more beautifully. And I remember getting to Orlando and immediately setting a meeting with Phil Rollins and Adrian Heath from Orlando City just to say, hey, I'm in town. I'm a soccer guy. I've covered it. I've played it my whole life. I'm a big proponent of the game, and you know, just wanted to introduce myself. And I remember Phil telling me, you know, we're going to have an MLS team here in the next year and a half. And I walked out of that meeting kind of chuckling and shaking my head, saying, yeah, okay, sure. You know, I've been around sports long enough to know or think I knew that things don't move that fast.
Yeah.
And maybe I was just jaded by the fact that I had been covering the DC United Stadium process and figured everything moved at a glacial speed like that, but I've been very lucky.
That's okay. So let's get into the beats. You know, and obviously there are much more important forums to discuss what happened in Charleston than this one. However, you were there when everything went down, covering the team as they were there for playing Charleston Battery for U.S. Open Cup. You're actually driving on your way back from Charleston to Orlando. So I guess the pertinent part of the conversation for you and I is, what was the mindset of the team after the match when they found out that their hotel was kind of real close to the center of everything that happened, and where are they today as far as their mindset's concerned?
Yeah, I think that it was surprise. A lot of surprise, a lot of stunned faces when I got downstairs to the locker room. And obviously, the game had been bizarre in its own right,
yep.
And I think the players weren't sure how to feel after the win, relieved, happy, celebratory, not too happy about the way they had played. So there was already this kind of weird emotion, I think, as they came into the locker room, and then to learn from the team, one of the operations guys, what was going on around their hotel. I think everyone was just trying to get more information and trying to communicate to people that things were okay and to learn more. And certainly, I think the fact that there were two coaches on staff who have very deep connections to the Charleston community, and Ian Poehler and Mark Watson, both guys who played and coached in Charleston, I think that added to just the concern about the community in general. And then really it was about the logistics of are we going to be able to stay at our hotel? How are we going to get to the hotel? Obviously, everything was locked down in that area. The street, I mean, the church was literally right across the street from the hotel. I went to the team hotel today, and standing in the front door of the hotel, you could see the church.
Wow.
I mean, within a few hundred feet. And in fact, we learned later that as the game was unfolding, when the shooting occurred, that the survivors actually went into that hotel after the event unfolded. So they were right in the heart of things. And I think it kind of is a sobering moment, obviously, and it speaks maybe to the reality of what sports is, kind of a relief from real life and not something to be taken too seriously. And you know, even just today, being in the hotel earlier to watch the U.S. Open Cup draw with the coaching staff, it was still that moment of kind of looking around at the scene and
yeah.
Understanding what had been taking place in that very same lobby less than 24 hours before, and just being very mindful and thankful for what you have, and also thinking about those that were involved in the shooting last night.
And it's hard to stay hyper-focused on Orlando City, the club, in the middle of something like this. But, you know, this is the conversation that we're having. So where were they today? Because, you know, it's a very scary experience for the players on the team. And what time did they get to bed last night? What time were they up today? And do you see anything kind of lingering over as far as mentally draining going into their match on Saturday?
No, I think, you know, they probably got home around, I would say probably around 11:30 last night to the hotel. I think talking to some of the coaches and players, you know, it was kind of an eerie scene when they got to the hotel. Everything was shut down. There were still SWAT members moving up and down the block. There was a police barricade. People weren't getting in and out of the hotel. They actually came in a side door when they got there in the team bus. And so, yeah, I think that there was it was certainly a weird night for them, but they're trying to keep things somewhat business as usual this morning. They woke up. They had a team breakfast, a team meeting. Watched the U.S. Open Cup draw, I think, just kind of on their own in their rooms. And they'll head to the airport here in about another hour and a half or so. And and get on their way to Montreal. They don't have much time to think about Charleston anymore, and I think I don't know how much it'll linger for them. I certainly think that for a lot of the players, it'll be something that they remember in their career for a long time.
Yeah.
Because just being that close to something that tragic, it impacts you. I mean, even for me, driving home from the stadium last night, and I wasn't staying downtown. I was staying about a mile and a half, 2 miles away from the team hotel and from the event on the fringes of downtown, right on the river. And just driving home down around the outside of the downtown with how eerie things were and kind of head on a swivel because the shooter was still on the loose. I mean, that impacts you. I don't think it's unfair to say that certainly the players will remember what it was like when they got to a hotel when that was going on in the street in front of them. So it'll be interesting to see if it does have any impact. But I think the fact that they're leaving for Montreal today and not staying another night in Charleston might help them be able to move forward and be ready for Saturday's game.
Well, so let's talk about the match itself. You said how wild it was. It was a wild night throughout U.S. Open Cup on Wednesday. What was it like in talking with the guys, maybe even Adrian Heath himself? He probably is the best person to get the impression on this. What was it like being on the other side of the coin? You know, they're not the USL upstarts trying to knock off an NASL or an MLS team. This was a USL team trying to knock them off as the big dog on the block.
Yeah, that was the message all week long. It was, look, we've been here before. We've been the team trying to knock off the MLS team. We've been the team that's knocked off an MLS team. Just 2 years ago, they beat Colorado and Sporting Kansas City on a run to the quarterfinals. So they knew that Charleston was going to come out with everything they had, and they knew there was already a rivalry there, frankly, between Charleston and Orlando City, and one that Orlando City had thoroughly dominated during its time in USL. So even more incentive for this club to Charleston to try to want to get a win because they want to prove, hey, you're not that much greater than us, even though you
yeah.
are now in MLS. So, you know, Adrian Heath has talked about the fact that this franchise wanted to compete for a U.S. Open Cup title this year, and he wanted to field a strong lineup. But when you've got two games upcoming in a week in a very tight Eastern Conference and you've got guys with knocks, you just can't justify putting a guy like Kaká, Breck Shea, Christian Aguita, guys with a little bit of dings here and there. They need some time to rest to play them in a U.S. Open Cup game on a Wednesday night and then expect them to play Saturday, Wednesday again. So, you know, he had to field a young lineup. And I think, you know, as much as the coach can emphasize over and over and over again to a bunch of young guys that they're going to be coming for you like this is the biggest game of their season, you don't really know it until you get out on the field. And I think they were overwhelmed a bit in the first hour of the game or so. And then it just totally went crazy from there. eight goals in the next hour of soccer. It was insanity.
Is there anything to be taken away, or is any positive to hang on the fact that they were able to go and get a result without Kaká and Breck and Talley and the rest in the lineup?
Sure. I mean, I think there were some positive performances. I think Earl Edwards Jr., the goalkeeper out of UCLA, has a really, really bright future ahead of him. Orlando City really thinks that they've ended up with a steal, frankly, a kid that they took in the fourth round who had U.S. under-17 national team experience, and they've been very, very pleased with him. And even though they allowed four goals, I think Earl kept them in the game. I mean, he made an outstanding save at the end of extra time to get the game to penalties, a full stretch into the upper 90 to his left, and he made the save. So I think you take away Earl coming out of that as a winner in his first pro start, and guys like Connor Donovan and Harrison Heath, Tyler Turner, getting some big minutes, I think, was important as well. Regardless of maybe how well they played or didn't play, I think just the fact that they got a game and a really competitive game at that is important for their development, because it's been so hard for Orlando City in the sense that they want to send these guys down to Louisville to get some minutes, but with the injuries and the call-ups they've had, and the fact that Harrison and Tyler, for example, are very, very close to breaking into that lineup, they just can't afford to send him down. So I think it was important to get two 19-year-old prospects 90 minutes plus against a team that was really gunning for him.
So last thing on U.S. Open Cup, as the draw was announced, it'll be Columbus Crew traveling to Orlando to take on Orlando City. And after I hadn't realized this, obviously, because when you're looking at other things, or maybe you're not a huge fan of either team, just a fan of the league. But reading your column from today, where you recap the draw, I had no idea that there. I don't want to say bad blood, but you know, we talk about Orlando City versus NYCFC, but really that's just because they both came in at the same time. It seems like a real rivalry is brewing versus Columbus.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre, right? I mean, why would you ever tie Orlando City
exactly.
and Columbus together? You never would. But that's the beauty of sports, right? It's like before the season, everyone was wondering who's Orlando City's rival is going to be. It's going to be NYCFC. The NYCFC fans hated the fact that they were being put in this rivalry. They were, oh, we're not rivals with you. We're rivals with the Red Bulls and all this. And you wonder, okay, is there going to be a natural rivalry that comes about in the next few years? Is it going to be Atlanta? You know, if a Miami team happens eventually, obviously there's going to be a natural rivalry. And then all of a sudden it's Columbus.
You know,
the fans going back and forth at each other after the 3-0 loss up in Columbus where Rafa Ramos got red carded for just a terrible, terrible red card. He just lost his temper and went in on a bad tackle. And then come back down to Orlando and a lot of trash talk before the game among the fan bases. And then another red card for Michael Parker. So, yeah, it's kind of cool to see a rivalry starting to form and just games that frankly get a little bit chippy. And I think Adrian Heath put it perfectly. These are two teams that play the exact same style. They like to knock the ball around. They like to play pretty soccer, possess the ball. And yet when they get on the field against each other, it kind of devolves into this physical, gritty, nasty game. And hey, I think it's a good thing for Orlando City and probably a good thing for Columbus too. And certainly adds to the intrigue of a U.S. Open Cup game that otherwise you might just kind of shrug and say, oh, yeah, it's two MLS teams going at it. Well, now it's like, okay, well, are they going to make it through a game without a red card or not? Let's wait and see.
Yeah, especially when you throw in the stakes of the U.S. Open Cup as we get closer and closer to that championship game and that pass on to the CONCACAF Champions League. This kind of competition, this kind of tournament-style match between two teams that kind of don't like each other already is the kind of thing that solidifies long-term rivalries.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now you're playing after two kind of gritty games, like you said, now you're playing a game with some real legitimate stakes in the middle of a season. So I think it's going to be a good game. I think it'll be a fun game. And, you know, I'll be interested to see what Orlando City can do here. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be easy to beat Columbus, whether they're home or not. And then you're looking at a trip to either Chicago or Charlotte if you win the game, and then you're on the road again in the semifinals. I think for Orlando City, ideally for them, they'd be looking at a scenario where maybe they could host a U.S. Open Cup championship as an expansion team. And I would be interested to see because I think it would draw one heck of a crowd, yeah, as we've seen maybe Seattle do. For that reason alone, I'd like to see Orlando City kind of surprise some people in advance because I think it'd be kind of cool to see 60,000 people possibly again turn out for a game with some silverware on the line.
And one of the things that I saw today reading your tweets is just a couple of people asking about what U.S. Open Cup is. Is this count in MLS standings? And, you know, I look at those kind of things as really positive things. We knew Orlando City was going to have a base of hardcore fans who knew the league and knew what they were getting into. But I like seeing things, people asking you questions like this, because that says that guys or people who were maybe casual fans or maybe just kind of checking it out because it's a new sport in their city, they're actually becoming more and more invested to the point where they need to know and want to know what's going on and what this competition means.
Absolutely. I mean, it's made, you know, for me, it's been interesting because I kind of try to balance in my coverage with the Sentinel where, you know, I don't want to say dumb things down, but
yeah,
in some instances you need to a little bit to help the people that are casual fans that are trying to learn about the sport and become fans. And sometimes the kind of diehard get angry that I have to dumb things down or that the paper wants me to dumb things down. But it, like you said, I think it shows the fact that I kind of look at it as kind of rings of fans. You've got the inner circle that has been there for the last few years of USL, the hardcore fans that know a lot about the sport. You've got the outer ring that's kind of been popping in and out during the USL days. They were there for the championship. They were taking notice. Okay, maybe we'll buy some season tickets when they're in MLS. And now you've got the final ring out there of the casual fans who didn't take notice at all until 60,000 people piled into the Citrus Bowl, and then they went down for one game and said, hey, this is pretty fun. I want to do this more often. And that's the fan that Orlando has really been trying to capture, and I think that's the fan that has been clinging on to it a little bit more than anyone anticipated. It's the reason why they're putting 30,000 fans in the stands week in, week out. And it's been a really interesting part of the coverage because, yeah, I do get emails from both sides probably every story I write, some asking for further explanation of some of the basics, some asking for some of the really, really nitty-gritty X's and O's side of soccer that clearly want to dig into the maybe more advanced side of things. And I think that's exciting. I think that's where soccer is headed right now in this country, is that we've got more of those outer fans that are starting to join in a bit, but then we've also got fans that are becoming more and more knowledgeable as they really invest in the league. And I think Orlando City has a really good mix of that going on right now. And it's been a really, really cool, unique thing to be able to be a part of and watch and kind of observe even as I'm writing day-to-day about the team.
I wanted to ask you about, obviously, the team was going to stick to the plan at the beginning, or at least through the first season, no matter what the results looked like. But, you know, obviously the natural comparison is NYCFC. But if you look historically at MLS expansion teams, what you usually see is teams that come out kind of quick, have nice starts, not great starts, but nice starts. And then as the season goes on, they just gradually fall away and then end up towards the end of the pack as far as MLS standards are concerned. It feels like Orlando is doing the reverse, where they're doing what you kind of expect at the beginning, which is kind of faltering at the beginning. Now they're starting to get themselves together and moving forward and putting results together. How important has it been, I guess, to stick to the plan? Not that you were going to flush it down anyway, but how important was it to kind of ride out that initial rough stretch to get where we are now with Orlando?
Yeah, I think it was really important, you know, and the funny thing is it's hard to explain it, right? Because fans want results right away. That's the downside of an expansion season, is you understand that you need to win right away to kind of maintain the fans, keep people interested, keep people coming out. And at the same time, an expansion season is not built to win right away. You know, you're bringing 30 guys together for the first time and trying to compete with teams that have been together for 2-3 years. And so there was a little bit of that going on early in the season. And I think what kind of helped in a way, obviously I think it contributed to the results, but the fact that there were injuries and international call-ups that were really impacting the pool of players that Adrian Heath had to select, I think that provided some perspective for the front office, for the coaching staff to say, hey, you know what? We really haven't seen this team that we built together yet. We've had injuries, we've had call-ups, we've had to lean on some young guys way earlier than we wanted to lean on them. Guys that we wanted to give some time to develop have been forced into bigger roles than we had hoped from the jump. Let's just hold off, wait and see what happens once guys like Darwin Ferran are fully integrated, once Kaká kind of adjusts to his role on this team, once Breck Shea is not here and there with the U.S. national team, back and forth, back and forth. And what we started to see is that this is a pretty good team they put together, and it's got decent depth. Now, the question is, what is decent depth? Because I think what you alluded to with expansion teams, ultimately that's what costs you over the course of a 34-game season, is you're going to have those moments where guys get hurt. You're going to have those moments where guys are away, get called up, and you need to rely on the 16th, 17th, 18th guy on the squad. And the way MLS is built, it's very, very difficult to expect you to have that quality depth in year one. And, you know, even talking to Bruce Arena earlier this season about it, he said he felt like expansion teams were at a bit of a disadvantage because the pool is now thinning out with more and more teams coming in. And so there's not as much talent, even in the expansion draft, to go and sign and bring into your team. So, you know, it's been, I think for Orlando City, it's been about as expected for them through the first half or so of the year. The question is going to be, you know, if they add one or two of the right pieces in the July window, where can they go? Can they become a team that truly competes in an Eastern Conference that's wide open?
We had Dom Dwyer on earlier. He was our first guest. Obviously, I didn't ask him about the stuff pertaining to Adrian Heath's comments, more so because, he just got pulled into something, another orbit that he really didn't even know what he's getting pulled into. But you, Paul, I can ask about, because you're with the team all the time. You speak with Adrian Heath on a consistent basis. What was his thought process in throwing that kind of comment out, if there was a thought process?
Well, I mean, look, Adrian's in his first year as a head coach in MLS, and I think that the thought process was probably as simple as, I'm starting this answer off as a joking response to fan queries on a local radio show, and not thinking the process through that there's no such thing as a local radio show anymore. And as much as you feel like you're answering to please the fans, I mean, the way the question was framed, I don't know if you heard the clip, but it was, are you looking at bringing Dom back? Oh, and here's a second question. Free Dom, please free Dom. And all of the fans in the bar cheering loudly. And so I think you get caught up in that a little bit, and you yeah. start to answer jokingly, and then dive into a little bit of maybe the behind-the-scenes stuff and the personal stuff that you kind of forget it's supposed to be behind-the-scenes stuff. And I think that's kind of what happened. I don't think Adrian Heath meant it as something that was going to become a national story. I don't think he meant it as something that was going to end up on a blog and then get shared and go and turn into this big story. So I think that was the thought process. I really don't think it was anything malicious. It was more just kind of forgetting about the way the world functions now. If you're a coach on a radio show, you just need to know that you have to watch your public comments at all time. And look, this is an area that loves Dom Dwyer. Orlando City looks at him. The fans look at him as a hero in the club's history. He has a great relationship with the fans. I interviewed Dom at the All-Star game last year. He is not shy about talking about how much he respects Adrian Heath and how much he credits Adrian Heath with pushing the buttons to turn him into the goal scorer he is today. I mean, he said that to me in the locker room last year. So clearly there's a strong relationship there. But, yes, I think Adrian knows now and recognizes that. He put Dom in a tough spot, and he put himself in a tough spot, and he probably regret. I could say he regrets it, certainly, and definitely took a lesson out of it, I think, as well.
How much deja vu did you have during the that little 1 month, 6 week period where the stadium deal for Orlando was a little bit shaky?
Oh my gosh! You know, you think you escape it, right?
Yes.
You think you escape this stuff. I did hear, and it's like smooth sailing. An MLS team is coming. No big deal. goes through. All the money gets approved. La di da. There's a stadium being built. There's shovels in the ground. You know, a couple weeks later, and I'm thinking, what kind of world is this? and then everything hits the fan, right? And I'm like, okay, this is a little bit more in my wheelhouse. But yeah, I mean, it's been a totally different process in Orlando. It's really been interesting, because I think if you did the same thing in some of the markets that MLS exists in now and has existed in, if DC United didn't exist until this year, for example, I think you'd see a lot of similar support to what you're seeing in Orlando, just because that initial excitement of getting a team with the right makeup of a population can really spur the success of a franchise. The timing was right in Orlando, and I think that's lent to how easy things have gone in the whole stadium process. Now we see it being privately funded and all the kind of great publicity they've gotten from that as well. But
yeah.
You know, I think the success is there in all the MLS markets. I'm really excited and eager to see what happens in D.C. when that stadium is built. And I told someone the other day, no matter where I am in my career, if I'm here in Orlando and they're playing in L.A. that weekend, I'm going to have to find an excuse to end up in D.C. for the first game in that stadium, because I've been following it for too long to not be there for that first game in 2017 or 2018, whatever it is.
Yeah, well, you know what, Paul, this is still D.C. When it's done, that's when I'll start putting timelines on when we can go into it.
Yeah, I'm not scheduling or booking any trips to D.C.
No.
for a stadium opening until I see the stadium fully constructed, field laid down, and, you know for sure if game's actually going to be played there.
Exactly. Paul Tenorio, thank you so much, man. Safe travels back from Charleston. We appreciate the time, man.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
For more show information, go to pitchpass.com.